A number of years ago, I was set to travel with my boss at the time to a meeting in Indianapolis, Indiana. Now, by day, my boss, whose name was Doug, he was the CEO of a big software company. But by weekend, he was an avid pilot. He had hangar space and flew his own twin engine in and out of Spirit of St. Louis Airport in Chesterfield, Missouri. So I remember him walking into my office one day. This was the summer of 2001. And he said, "Look, you can fly to this meeting commercial if you want, but I'm going to be flying there in my own plane, and you should just hop in." So I thought, okay, sure, I'll do that. And so we did. I remember being particularly impressed with a couple things about that flight. First, the meticulous attention to detail and preparation. The flight plan, air traffic control, weather, the wind and clouds, the plane diagnostics. It was all pretty impressive, and in fact, I think this must be part of the zen-like experience that these private pilots have. To some degree, they must enjoy the preparation, being commander-in-chief over so many intermingled details. But second, and probably most impressive, was the technology, the gauges and the widgets and the readouts, the controls. Doug was, of course, a licensed pilot, but he had what's called an instrument rating, which to a layman like me pretty much means you can fly without seeing anything. You can fly and land your craft in little to no visibility. So flying not by vision, but really by data and controls only. He jokingly called it fly by knob. And that's essentially what it was for that short flight to Indy. This turning of knobs and watching readouts, processing who knows how many numbers and metrics in real time, and knowing what each and every one meant. It was pretty neat. We had a nice day, too. Mainly blue skies and a few bumpy white clouds, but otherwise the fly-by knob worked out just fine. But I remember asking Doug, it was mid-flight, I think, probably I was too scared to ask beforehand, but I remember asking him, so what happens if something goes wrong? What if it doesn't all go by the book? And his answer was simple. He said, well, the knobs and the gauges are important, but you still have to know how to fly. Radiation treatment planning sometimes reminds me of good piloting. All the knobs and technology and gauges and data processing, so much critical information, and the driving forward towards a single outcome, a safe arrival, so to speak. But above all, no matter how technology advances, there's that thing, that instinct, that's so important. Pretty much no matter what, you have to know how to fly. And in this episode, I introduced the 2017 AAMD plan study, done in conjunction with the annual meeting of the AAMD, and also the biggest and longest running series of plan studies on planet Earth. This year, the AAMD meeting is in June, and as luck would have it, in Indianapolis, Indiana. So, let's fly. This is Quality Time, and I'm your host, Ben Nelms. This year's kind of special in that it marks what I believe is the 10th anniversary of the AAMD treatment planning study, and a long-standing goal of all these years has been to eventually have the professional dosimetrists and or physicists of the AAMD, of the international community, essentially take over the program. And by take over, I mean pick the case study, formulate the goals of the study, make it challenging, develop the metrics and the plan scoring mechanism, and ultimately then present the findings at the meeting. And of course, this is finally possible now that we have the cloud-based Pronos system as the engine behind it to collect the data and do the scoring. So this year is the first of many now where one of your own members will be running the show. So who, you may ask, who is this lucky and brave soul for 2017? And I'm proud to say it is Mr. Chris Gaynor. Chris has been a certified dosimetrist for over 15 years, and you may recognize his name as a past president of the AAMD. He works at Bay Regional Cancer Center in Panama City, Florida. And if you don't know Chris already, well, just trust me, you should. He's full of experience and energy and stories. And on top of all this, he's got the heart the size of the Gulf of Mexico. So Chris stepped up to the plate, and he had a lot of good ideas for this year's planned study, and he came at us with all of them. It went something like this, and here's Chris to describe it.
Do you want something that we've done before? Do you want something that is moderately routine that you may see 50% of your caseload in a day? Or do you want something really kind of is going to walk through your door maybe once or twice a quarter, and you're just faced with what do I do with this? So I had locations from the top of the head to anything in the lower pelvis, ranging from post-op surgery cases to pre-op surgery cases, combined chemo, no chemo, weird things like maxillary sinus tumors, post-op pancreatic bed tumors with positive lymph nodes. I had the old school Graves ophthalmy type cases, anything she wanted across the board, really. Primary brain. I left the door open and said, there's a whole laundry list that we can look at. Just depends on where you want to go with it.
Chris started off with about 7 options that he came forth. And we kept asking Chris, hey, what do you want to do? And he narrowed it down to 3. And he took a bunch of screen captures, even sent us some of the raw data for the 3 finalists. And to me, one of them really stood out as something unique, something we hadn't done anything close to in the previous 10 years. It was unique. And more than that, there seemed to be a connection Chris had to it. Here's Chris to explain.
We sided on one that left us open for a varied array of planning opportunities. Different techniques would satisfy a really good plan for this. We took a head and neck case, something that people would normally see coming through in a daily clinical environment, just a rural setting. Not usual, not normal, kind of aggressive, a little bit more advanced than what you'd hope to see. But it's not something that you wouldn't have had a physician request, hey, this is what I'm looking at. What can you do? And that's what we went with.
I remember pulling it up and looking at it. You said, here, choose what you guys will think most interesting. And I remember I was looking at it going, oh, man, this one is different. And we were kind of drawn to that one that was different. And I could kind of tell in the way you introduced the stories that there was one in particular that maybe, whether you knew it consciously or not, that you were holding on to. And to me, it almost sounded like you had it was a unique experience with this particular patient. I'm not sure, but it was fresh in your memory.
No, that's true. This one in particular is a guy that comes with unique history. He's a former service member in our military, kind of fell off the grid a little bit, kind of started living an introverted lifestyle, but maintained work balance with being able to do jobs with his hands. Whatever he was good at, he did. And then was found, I don't know how deep you want to get into this, but his mailman had noticed that his mail was stacking up, and that was unusual for him not to be home. So he started doing a little research, just looking in the windows from side to side, and noticed that he could see this particular patient lying on the floor in his home. Had the police called, had to go through the Baker Act process to go in the home and get help for him, and then institutionalize him, put him in the hospital. And then you start to see the presentation for this particular case. And again, I can go into the details on that. Relatively speaking, in centimeter terms, you're looking at a 7.5 centimeter by 9 centimeter by 2.5 centimeter lesion, primary lesion. That's 3 inches by 3.5 inches by 1 inch deep on a primary lesion for a guy that has lived an introverted lifestyle, really didn't want to have any influence from the outside world, limited friends, limited social network, and now he's faced with a life-threatening illness. And that's where we came in. My first presentation with him was on the CT simulator, And I think almost every dosimetrist, radiation therapist can tell you, in some cases, the odor from the carotid tissue can be overwhelming. And I had not had one this intense in a while. But he's such a gracious individual, appreciated every aspect of what we did, no matter the pain. So it was a fascinating case, that's for sure.
You got to know him over the weeks, months. Do you think that he didn't get himself to a clinic because he thought he'd be bothering people, or do you think there was some kind of embarrassment? Do you have any measure on that?
I would tell you that in my interaction with him, he's one of those guys that probably is used to doing everything for himself, doesn't expect any outside help, never would ask for it, primarily because he had other lesions that we were looking at that it, he stated had been in place for 10 plus years. It's just that this one particular one on the left side grew really, really quickly, and I think he thought he could handle it. Now, once it grew to a point where it was a malformation, I think he just decided that he would not go out in public anymore.
When you were assigned a treatment plan, you know, you had a lot of options. Now, we probably shouldn't go into the detail about what you actually chose, but Chris, I was wondering if you could give us a summary of what you just off the cuff thought, here are the options we ought to look into.
When this presented, especially with a case that looks like this, my first inclination was, well, we'll throw all the bells and whistles at it. Every type of technology that I have, we'll utilize, try to make this as uniform and homogeneous and beautiful as we can, because it's so extensive, what you're looking at, what you're trying to protect. It's in a very critical area. A lot of structures that can be damaged easily if you're not paying attention. And the question became, how much time do I have to put into this? When you've got 40 plus patients a day on a machine, you're in a small rural center where you have limited resources, not only in time, but also in personnel. How much time can you put into this? But at the end of the day, it's still about a person that needs some help. So I started by looking at every advanced piece of technology I've got and putting together a really unique, robust, technologically advanced plan. But that doesn't necessarily answer all the questions that you need to have answered in this kind of case.
Let me kind of step back for a moment here. I think one of the best things we've achieved with all of these plan studies, or as you may remember them as called, the plan challenges, is that we really put plan quality scoring in action, so that the way that plans were going to be evaluated was crystal clear and transparent. And it really allowed people and planning systems to push the limits on what's achievable with the pixels on the screen. And I think that's been really good and will continue to be very good for the industry. One of the things, though, that can get lost when you just break it down to metrics and numbers, or to use the airplane analogy from the introduction to knobs and widgets, is that you lose sight a little bit of the practicality of a treatment plan. And I'm just not just talking about can it be calculated and delivered accurately. I really mean the practicality that becomes the individual situation for every patient. In every prior plan study, the patient you meet are CT images and RT structure set that you download. And that's where you start. In this case, in Chris's case, this was a patient that he treated. And there were some challenges there, and we thought this would be a great opportunity to take some slightly different angle at this plan study. And what we're going to be doing here is we're not really going to be collecting the scores per se to say you got a 145 versus a 125. No, not at all. We are going to have a plan algorithm that anyone with their treatment type can load it up and make sure they're hitting the minimal requirements. But what we're going to be doing instead of that, we're not going to be, it's not a contest. It's going to be more of a collection of ideas. There are no rights and wrongs. We are looking for how people think. What would people think? What could go wrong? What could go right? What's our experience with this type of tumor? That's what we want to collect. And we want to collect that for the good of the community. And we really look forward to seeing your ideas with Chris's particular patient and learning what everyone's experiences are and successes and maybe even failures. We're going to be collecting that through Prono, and that's what we're going to be discussing in this year's plan study. So it's going to be a little bit different. Not so much a competition, rather a gathering, a collection of ideas and of learning. This may be a type of case study unseen by many of you. Maybe this isn't the type of patient your clinic would take on. So now everyone gets a chance to see, what would we do here? And we encourage you to interact with your physicians, talk about it, and then come to Prono with your ideas. And that's what Chris is going to be presenting. And I really look forward to this plan study. Again, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Knowing that that's the framework of this plan study, a little different. What do you hope your colleagues in the viewership, they get out of this plan study?
For me personally, I'd like to see our profession get back to the point where it's not just run an optimizer or click on a planning technique that's built into your system, a database somewhere. Each case, to a certain extent, brings its own unique variables to the system. Can we begin to get to a point where you say, okay, I know where the M homogeneities are going to be. Can I use that to my advantage? Can I begin to manipulate doses in certain regions based on critical structure thresholds? Or can I start to see techniques that will give me a better outlook or a better long-term distribution for the overall quality of life for this case? And dosimetry in and of itself presents itself uniquely that it's an art plus a science. And sometimes getting away from that mindset of push a button on a programmed planning template, let the optimizer run through it. If it meets the constraints, then great. Maybe we should take a step back and see where we can begin to make these more beneficial in the long term.
When we decided to go this route where it was going to be not about a plan score, there was some concern about whether we would get as much participation as we're used to. So, for example, last year we got over 400 people. It was in conjunction, AAMD with the RSS, so we had a lot of good outreach from those organizations. But there was some concern that without the competitive nature, without the scoring, there might be lower participation. I'm hoping that it's actually as much or if not more, because this really, when it comes down to it, it's not about competing person versus person or planning system versus planning system. It's about having something valuable that we can put in our pocket and say, you know what, I learned a few things from that. That's my goal, and I think we'll get more participation, because what we're trying to learn is what would you do and what was your thought process? And from that, if we do it right, we'll all come out a little better. That's my hope. What would you say to encourage all of your peers, not only in the United States, but around the globe, to participate in this plan study?
Absolutely, I agree with you. I think everyone brings a level of knowledge and experience to the table. Whether or not you've been doing this for many years, or you're just new into the field or the profession of radiation oncology as a whole, you bring a skill set to the table. So I would encourage you to take advantage of an opportunity to just lay out, okay, this is based on my experience with the clinic that I'm at or in the position that I'm in with the people that are here, physician-wise, patient-wise, therapy-wise, what would I have done with this? How many times would I have gone back to my physician and said, okay, we can do this, this, and this, but this doesn't work out, or this one doesn't look as pretty here, doesn't look as pretty there. This one's better in this location. I would encourage you to start putting your thoughts together on what you would typically do. Because at the end of the day, when I leave an educational program, I'd like to be able to implement something in the clinic as soon as I get back. Will it help me see cases that I currently have on the schedule in a better way?
And you've been in dosimetry how many years, if I may ask?
Certified, I passed my certification board in 2001. So you're looking at 16 years this year. Radiation therapy, about 18 years, and in the hospital setting for about almost 25.
And still hungry to learn, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
This year's AAMD meeting is in Indianapolis, Indiana, on June 11th through 15th. The Prono Plan Study will launch on May 1st. As always, your participation is what drives the usefulness of the plan studies, and we hope everyone, whether you're attending the meeting or not, whether you're a AAMD member or not, or nations around the world, please be involved. We need your input. I'll close it out with Chris describing the input of the one person, the patient in this case, who agreed wholeheartedly to let us use his case study as a learning tool. Here's Chris.
He was appreciative that maybe someone could learn something from his experience, especially since once he realized that there was help he could get, it changed his demeanor quite a bit, changed his personality back to probably what he used to be. If you fast forward to where we are today with this case, he is back in his community, back at work. And every time he comes in for a follow-up, he's incredibly appreciative, apologizes for the amount of effort that we had to go into his case. So now we have this relationship built, and it's unique, but it's really incredible.
Quality Time is a Prono Systems production. If you have ideas for a future topic, something you want us to investigate, or a story that you would like to tell right here on the show, then by all means, let us know. We want to hear from you.